Do you or someone you love wish you had a better job? Want to be happier on your current job? Don't even have a job? Welcome to Work with Marty Nimco.
I want to give you a window into the way I was thinking about preparing for the show. It struck me that bumper stickers and sound bites sometimes do more to kickstart thinking than all the fat tomes in the world. I mean, I think about, you know, think globally, act locally. I think about do random acts of kindness. Even on the other end of the political continuum, just don't do drugs or whatever it was that Nancy Reagan said. So I think that I went and I thought about the words and phrases that relate to the workplace that most would encourage thoughtful analysis, that would make somebody elevate the level of the conversation in a work group, whether in a meeting or a one-on-one or, you know, to external stakeholders or whatever. And I made a list of them. And I thought that I would share them with you because just perhaps these words, if you use them in a proper context, of course, could elevate the discussion. And it's kind of an under-the-radar way of improving workplace skills. So I will toss out, maybe there are about 20 of these that I've come up with, and certainly feel free after I'll go through this. I'll give out the phone number, and then you can call in, and if you've got a word or phrase that you think would elevate the discourse in your workplace, I certainly welcome the call. The first one, and maybe the most important, I'm not sure, is probabilistic. I really believe that key to critical thinking is to make probabilistic assessments of alternatives. For example, the realistic best-case scenario in our nonprofit or whatever is X for these reasons. And I assess the probability of that occurring at about 30%. That's the best-case scenario. The realistic middle outcome is Y for these reasons. And I assess its probability of occurrence at 60%. And the realistic worst-case outcome is Z for these reasons. And I assess the probability of it occurring at 10%. That's a probabilistic analysis, which helps ensure that the discussion in the work group is going to be, you know, not just black and white thinking. So probabilistic is a good word to trigger thoughtful analysis of problems in the workplace and, of course, in every aspect of life. Another one I love is opportunity cost. This, along with probabilistic thinking, may be critical thinking's most important component. For example, before we at our nonprofit invest in a new building, we should consider the opportunity cost. We could spend just a bit to fix the old building and use the rest of the money to provide services for the needy. Opportunity cost. It's a great way to take a hard look at the risks and rewards of a given intervention or an action. Another word I like a lot is fair-minded. I use that term to encourage people to be more statesman-like, statesperson-like, rather than ideologue-like thinking. Using the term fair-minded also without making it like too much bragging, too much braggadocio, it adds gravitas to your position. For example, from where I sit, a fair-minded analysis would be to reallocate some of our raises to our best performers or our more ethical performers or whatever you want. Fair-minded, good term. Another term I like that's kind of related to that is wise. It's another word I use to invoke a reflective rather than a visceral reaction. It also adds gravitas to the position. So, for example, the dictum to never give unasked-for advice may be too black and white. The wise person recognizes when the rule should be broken. For example, let's say there is a coworker who's in denial. His or her endless, long-winded, not helpful monologues in meetings, he or she is completely unaware of them. So there's a role. We're not supposed to give unasked-for advice, and generally that's true, but if it goes on often enough, even if unasked-for, that advice might be appropriate. So wise is the term again. That's a good word. Rather than smart, wise has a greater sense of gravitas. Love the word. Axiomatic, another word I love. It's a term that describes a point that needn't be explained. For example, It's axiomatic that in corporate America, it's unacceptable to express anger more than very rarely. Axiomatic. It's a good way to, in a conversation, some things are just foundational. That's, of course, another one of the words I like to use, kind of very similar. Axiomatic, foundational. Another phrase I love to use, and again, I try to teach these to my clients as well, who are trying, a lot of my, increasing percentage of my clients are not unemployed looking for work. They're looking to be more successful and perceived as more worthy of leadership than they currently have. And sharing some of these concepts are very helpful in making that person seem more leaderly. So another example of that, which I, again, love, is thought experiment. This actually comes out of the field of philosophy. A lot of philosophers love this. In trying out an idea, I like to create a thought experiment. Here's an example. Imagine there were two identical Earths, and in one, all hiring was done purely on the merits. In the other Earth, efforts were made to compensate for past injustices to certain subgroups. In which Earth do you think greater good would net accrue short-term and long-term? It's a thought experiment. We're not, there aren't two parallel worlds, but it allows one to think again in a more elevated way. Next, continuum. It's another term I use to discourage black and white thinking. Most factors exist on a continuum. For example, where would you fall on the continuum from finding it easy to cold call versus being terrified of it? And what might make you move a bit toward the easy side? Instead of saying, I hate cold calling, I love cold calling, continuum allows for more nuance. And again, that's another signature characteristic of intelligence, reasoning, and leadership. I hope as you're listening to this, you get a sense. Some leaders, yes, they're promoted for non-merit-based reasons of a variety of sorts that go beyond the scope of what I can talk about here. But on average, the people that think that way in those complex ways, in those nuanced ways, are more likely to rise to leadership. It's not random who gets laid off, who stays in the same old crappy position, and who gets promoted. It's not always, but it is certainly that kind of more elevated thinking skills that's critical to making smart strategic decisions around an organization. Next term I like is a priori. A priori, depends on how you pronounce it. Anyway, it's a contention. It means that it's a contention you make without relying on future data. For example, a priori, my guess is that the community objections are going to delay the project for 6 months. And as we get into the project, I may revise that estimate. So it's my upfront thinking about subject. So you're clearly labeling it not as data-driven. And again, that shows your sophistication, that you're aware that this is not based on data. You're also showing you're not being biased. You're not trying to oversell that data. You're saying a priori. In other words, you know, based on my thinking, I'm guessing, or my past experience, I'm guessing the community objections are going to delay the project 6 months. That's a, again, it's a very nuanced, intelligent way to raise issues. And again, for those of listeners just joining us, listening to Work with Marty Nemko, I am offering some underused terms that are used by some of our leaders, that get people who tend to do well in the workplace in not just individual contributor roles, but in running meetings, in management, in leadership. People are often wondering, why the hell did he or she get promoted? Well, sometimes it is things like that. It is that elevated reasoning skills that make sure that the strategy and tactics that are explored are not explored in black and white thinking, but with more nuance. And sometimes, as I said at the top of the show, you can't instantly make somebody more intelligent. But if we can infuse some of these words into our vocabulary, it may remind us to use our highest and best reasoning skills, which may be a key to success. Which, of course, I don't define necessarily just as pecuniary terms, money terms, but success in terms of making a difference, leadership, being a person who has got more agency, if you will, over their work life and over the world. Another term I like is dispositive. It's a term that comes out of the law. The word dispositive describes an argument that trumps, pardon the expression, all others. For example, in deciding whether to continue the pilot program, what will be dispositive is the improvement in test scores or lack thereof. Dispositive. It's like a trumping argument. It trumps all other factors. Under-discussed or under-the-radar, they're kind of synonyms. You know, there's so much, for example, there's so much content available on the internet or whatever. Here's an example. Okay, so with so much content available on the internet, our newsletter needs to prioritize writing about ideas that are important but widely under-discussed or that are under the radar. Nice term, again, a nice good, it's a good filter for so much content. Because we could, you know, how often do we read articles and we say it's same old, same old? Or how many radio shows we listen to and say it's the same old, same old? And really, good decision making is about recognizing where the unmet need is. Whether it's where you're going to donate to charity or where you're going to invest your money in a company or a nonprofit or a government agency, under discussed, under the radar leads to nuance, smarter thinking. I've heard on certain radio stations, certain shows, the same topic again and again and again with just the slightest difference. And ironically, they're, for example, they're preaching to the choir. They're saying the same things that everybody already believed. Let's just say pro-choice. You know, it doesn't add anything to the equation. I'm very pro-choice, but hearing it one more time is not going to do necessarily as much as something that has less been discussed 10,000 times. Under the radar, under discussed, good word for selecting content, projects, etc. Takeaways. You know, we are in a society, especially here in the Bay Area, that is very resistant to hierarchical instruction. You're going to do X. We want you to do X. So even the word recommendations can sometimes feel it's too coercive for some people. And so I encourage my clients to use a term takeaway rather than recommendation. So, for example, in a meeting, here's what I hope will be the takeaways from the meeting, rather than here are the recommendations from the meeting. Takeaways, again, I cannot stress enough how I, at least over the 30 years that I've been a career counselor, and it's acceleratingly so in the last few years, how much more sensitive people are. We must be so much more careful in our wordsmithing, lest we turn people off unnecessarily. We've got to be very careful. So there, an example of that, takeaways versus recommendations, is one of a million examples of that. Another example, no, that's not of the same thing, but another example of the kind of phraseology that leads to more elevated thinking in meetings and at the workplace and your perceived value, and that is the imposter syndrome. That's a concise way of describing the many people who, despite years of education, feel ill-equipped to solve the problems that their degree implies they can. And I use that more as a balm, as more of something to make all of us who may, the Bay Area has the highest degree of, quote, educated people maybe in the world, college degree holders, master's degree holders, PhDs, and yet many of us still feel like our education did not render us capable of solving the real world problems we face in our workplace. And because there is such an emphasis on the theoretical in our universities, especially the more prestigious your school, Stanford, Berkeley, or like when my daughter went to Yale Law School, the more theory you know, but the less you really know how to practice law. And you can feel like crap. And acknowledging the imposter syndrome, let's say you're a manager, and you've got somebody you're supervising who has an MBA or has a PhD or whatever, and maybe expressing a little bit of insecurity. And you're saying, you know, it's not just your fault, really. The system's pretty crazy. We're having the people who train our practitioners are people who have opted out of the real world, whose real métier is a little narrow, esoteric, arcane area of research. And that person is teaching you? Even in medical school, some of the people teaching the medical students are people who don't practice medicine much at all. They sit in their labs studying some little rare disease of the thymus gland. And so, of course, doctors are going to come out feeling insecure. More reasons for it than that, but that's one. So if you as a manager or a leader say, you know, don't fully blame yourself. Yes, let's try to keep you growing, but, you know, it is axiomatic, again, to use one of those other terms, that university training very often is the cause of the disease called the imposter syndrome. Another term. You know, I think I'll give out the phone number now. I've got some more, and I really want to share these all with you, but I also don't want to make too much of a monologue. So, if you have a term that you think elevates the conversation in your workplace that you'd like to share, I invite you to call now here at Work with Marty and M. Cohen KALW, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Okay. While we're waiting for the calls to come in, some other terms that I think elevate the conversation in the workplace. Ad hominem. That term refers to a disagreement by name-calling rather than by reasoned argument. For example, I'm dispirited by the amount of ad hominem disagreement in this work group. Another one, canard. Canard means a widely held but specious belief, an inaccurate belief, an untrue belief. For example, that canard that telecommuters shirk is slowly being eroded by solid studies. Okay. Another one is cherry pick. This is one that many people are guilty of in arguments. They try to prove their argument with a cherry-picked, non-random example. It's an unrepresentative example used to make a point. For example, a client says, oh, he was late to work and he didn't get in trouble, yet when I was, I almost got written up. That's one cherry-picked example. It doesn't argue very well for your position. Cherry-picking militates, another word I like to use, it militates against solid decision-making. So I will tend to often call it out in a meeting, cherry-picking, as opposed to a preponderance of the evidence. See, again, there's another phrase. It's more about nuance, preponderance of the evidence, another term that comes out of the legal field. Right? None of this. Sometimes things are black and white. I don't mean to say everything is nuance, otherwise you'll talk ad nauseum, another term I like to use. But more often than not, thinking that governs the people who are unsuccessful in the workplace, the people who in meetings say things that are, you know, just they're not well reasoned. They tend to use this black-white thinking, like cherry-picking an anecdote. Philosophers, in philosophy courses, they make clear anecdote and analogy are the two weakest forms of argument. A good sample size of representative people making your inferences based on that is far more valid than saying, oh, Mary Johnson did whatever, even though journalists endlessly start every article or every many segments on, you know, Mary Johnson did whatever, and then we're expected to generalize from that. It's fine as an emotional hook, but good reasoning is never about an example or a cherry-picked example. You can drive home a point with an example, but it really is about either really good logical, to use the term I just used, a priori argumentation, or a good sample size of data. That's why big data is so popular these days, because it does use a large sample size in order to draw inferences. Next phrase, top of mind. That's a concise way of saying a concept that's in the forefront of one's thinking. For example, that supervisee of mine keeps her new habit top of mind by writing it on her palm and looking at it every time she takes a drink. Top of mind. Nice little phrase. Nothing profound, but I like it. Plant a seed. This is important. This is important not so much for the word, but the concept. People resist change. So a manager or a leader, somebody who's a change agent, often is wise to not expect immediate assent to a suggestion, but to accept that he or she has planted a seed. That is, that with time, it's an idea that may germinate. That is, the supervisee or the coworker or the boss will act on the suggestion. And often they end up perceiving the suggestion as their own. But plant a seed is a nice concept. Transformational. It's another phrase, a word I love to use. I often use that term to set a higher bar for education. Too many teachers and professors aim mainly just to convey information and some basic concepts, but important enduring change, for example, students who become better critical thinkers, requires instruction that's transformational, not only transmitting the key concepts, but driving the students to incorporate those concepts into how they interact with the world. Transformational. It elevates our thinking. We often say the word disruptive, but that's become a cliche in the workplace. But transformational is kind of a synonym. But instead of disrupt, which almost seems like, you know, anarchy and chaos, transformational implies change, radical change into something better. I like the word transformational. Iterate. Most excellent things did not start out that way. They underwent iterations, that is, revision after revision. For example, a beta version of software was tried out and revised, tried again and revised. Even after being made public, feedback generated more revision. You hear about, like, well, Microsoft Word is in its, you know, version 20 at this point. In the workplace, it is very wise to encourage iterative development because it's more successful, and here's this little kind of under-the-radar benefit, it's less frustrating. If a creator is so perfectionistic that he or she won't complete a draft until he feels it's bulletproof, it's very frustrating sitting there. But instead you say, you know, I'm going to crank out a first draft. I know it's going to be imperfect. I'll do the best that I can come up with in a reasonable amount of time, and then it'll iterate. I'll send it around for feedback. I'll make some changes. I'll send it around for feedback again. That's iteration. Again, that is one of the signature characteristics of a wise manager, leader, etc. Are you beginning to see, and this wasn't my original purpose in mentioning these, my word kind of trying to elevate the level of discourse that you bring to the workplace, but can you see, if you're a worker bee, if you're an individual contributor, and you're not the one who's getting to be a manager or leader, can you see, and you're not using that kind of nuanced analysis, those nuanced, not only the phrases, but nuanced thinking, can you see that why that might mitigate, that's another frame word I like to use, might mitigate against your getting that promotion? So either decide that, yes, this is a wake-up call to be more thoughtful, more nuanced, or decide, you know what, this is just not who I am. I'm a good technician, I'm a good individual contributor, I'm a good accountant, I'm a good clerk, I'm a good customer service person, I'm whatever, but I'm not meant to be a, you know, one of these nuanced leader, strategic thinking type people. Okay, now we'll go to the phones, but first let me give out the phone number again. I am, for those of you just joining us, you're listening to Work with Marty Nemko, I am sharing some of the words and phrases that I teach many of my clients on how to become more thoughtful, nuanced, intellectual, not for its own sake, but for making a difference in the workplace. And I invite you to call in if you've got a word or a phrase that you use that you think elevates the quality of thinking in your workplace. The phone number here is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And now, to the phones. Welcome to the show. It's your turn on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi, my name is Dave. I'm in San Francisco. And if you can hear me okay, I want to remark on one of your terms, and that's undiscussed.
Under-discussed.
Under the radar.
Right.
And I just want to confirm and endorse you on that. And my example is the debate that citizens have about pro-life and pro-choice. And people who are, persons who are pro-choice are often accused, or they're tarred with being pro-abortion. And the subtle thing is that no woman is wants an abortion.
You know, I'm going to interrupt you. This is off topic. Our show is about work, and I think this takes us into another direction, and it will encourage more calls. Whether you're pro-life or pro-choice, if you're listening to some conservative talk station, they're probably ad nauseum talking about pro-life. And if you're on a liberal station, there's going to be a, you know, I don't know as much anymore. It's, by now it's gotten to be old news. But any topic, whatever, wherever it is on the political spectrum, that gets talked about when there is an opportunity cost, when that those times on TV, in an article, on the radio, whatever, if that time could be spent on something fresher and yet important, that's important. And that's why I love to use the word under-discussed. Okay. Do I have another call there? No. Okay. So let me share some more of these terms that hopefully will elevate conversation in the workplace. Reinvent. I often use that term to describe the fields, again, of education and of clinical psychology. I believe that both of those fields really don't need any more tweaking. You know, lengthening the school day only means that the teachers are going to be teaching more of the same stuff. Cleaning the graffiti off the walls is tweaking, is not core to changing education. Education and clinical psychology, which has only moderate efficacy, very variable. It's more of an art. Both fields are crying for reinvention. And so I think that's a great term to use in your workplace. If, let's say, you've got a procedure in the workplace, it could be much more mundane, and the procedure is clunky, it's not working well, and it's not a matter of bolting on some little fix to that procedure in your workplace, a great thing to do would be say, you know, I'm wondering, rather than reforming or revising this procedure, we need to reinvent it. So again, sometimes there's time for nuance, and sometimes it requires reinvention. That's a term that I think is elevates conversation in the workplace. Another term I like is inveterate. Inveterate refers to a long-held, unlikely-to-change predisposition. For example, he is an inveterate padder of his expense account. Inveterate. It's just a good word. It's concise and it's a precise word. Instead of saying he does it a lot, he's always a padder of experiments, inveterate kind of says it in a very powerful and credible way. We have a call online. Let's go to the phones. Welcome to work. Yeah, welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. It's your turn on the air. What's on your mind?
I have just one word. Retool.
Okay, tell me more.
Just go take it from there.
Why do you use retool rather than retrain?
Because whatever you're covering, what really needs to be, let's say, taken to, is like retooling.
Give me an example. Use it in a sentence that you've used in your workplace.
Excuse me?
Use the word in a sentence that you might use in the workplace, using the word retool.
Watching the show Cosmos.
Okay. That's not using the word in a sentence. Anyway, I'll thank you for the call.
Sure.
Okay. I'm going to take one more shot at this. If you have a word or phrase that you use in the workplace that you think elevates the quality of the analysis and discussion in your workplace, I'd like you to share it. Otherwise, I'll just keep going through my list. I got about 10 more. And the phone number here, Work With More. And I think I'll broaden the discussion too. If you or someone you care about has got a work-related problem, any sort, whether you're 16 or 76, whether you're a clerk or a CEO, for-profit or non-profit, the bigger the problem, the better. I've been doing this a long time, and usually I can help. So the phone number here, Work With Marty Nemko, for what I call a workover, as well as any word or phrase that you use in the workplace that you think elevates the discussion, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. All right. Other terms that I think elevate discussion in the workplace is inexorable. Inexorable is a term that means an unstoppable but slow-moving progression. For example, there is inexorable movement toward single-payer health care, or there is inexorable movement toward greater rights for transgender people. That's the term, inexorable. Good term. Obligatory. Obligatory means performing an act perfunctorily, often to avoid offending someone while requiring minimum effort. So, for example, he made the obligatory appearance at the fundraiser or at the sales conference, but sneaked out early. Obligatory. It's a good term. Wow, now all our lines are lighted up all of a sudden. I guess people want workovers and they don't have vocabulary they want to share. All right, let's go right back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. It's your turn on the air. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I've got a word for you. Bayesian, as in Bayesian analysis.
Great. Now, Bayesian statistics are very different than from your traditional experiences. Define the difference between Bayesian and standard probabilistic, you know, basic statistics, your normal t-tests and analysis of variance. Tell us about Bayesians.
Bayesians take advantage of new information to reevaluate the probabilities of everything they went before. So if I were to use it in a sentence, I would say, as a Bayesian, this new study on the effects of breakfast on health completely changed my view of how I should be eating.
Right, and that ties in with one of the words we used earlier, which was iterative. Using Bayesian statistics allows you to iterate your opinions about what policy to enact. Is that a fair statement?
Iterative it seems to be sort of repetitive. Bayesian is more, I think of as interrupt-driven, where you take information when it appears. Suddenly you get some new information, you have to stop, you have to reevaluate all your previous assumptions.
Okay, fair enough. By the way, iterative does not imply repetitive at all. It means it keeps growing a little bit at a time. The best example really is a piece of software. The beta version is one iteration. In the first, the never regular published version is a little better, and the second one's a little better. That's an iterative process. But thank you. That's a great word. Bayesians, you got one more? That's a great one.
That's what I got for you today.
Perfect. Perfect. Thanks a lot for the call. Back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. What's on your mind?
Is that me? I guess that's me.
It is.
Oh, a couple things. First of all, we have this term at my office called realigning the office, which is shorthand for firing people.
Oh, geez, right. That's obfuscation. That's not elevating the discussion. That is putting a fog, a haze over the discussion. I hate that BS word. It's like, you know, frankly, when they use progressive to replace liberal or rainforest to replace jungle, you know, these are or transit to replace mass transit. These are phrases that don't add clarity. They detract from clarity. And so, yes,
yeah,
realigning rather than firing or laying off is corporate speak.
Yeah, and the only reason I bring it up is a lot of the words you're talking about have other meanings that I think may be clearer sometimes. So, anyway.
Can you get... Is there an example of a term that I gave where there is a clearer meaning than that which I offered?
I don't think I can come up with an example. I'm just, you know, I deal with a lot of architects, and we tend to use, actually I'm an architect, and we tend to use a lot of language that's not clear.
Oh, so okay,
and,
you got, right.
You know, anyway, it's just kind of interesting. Also, I had another, I want to change the subject a little bit. I do have a work-related issue.
Sure.
Realignment issue. So, and this has to do, this is kind of an interesting thing. My son got into some trouble when he was 13 years old, and now he wants to go in the military. He's getting close to graduating from high school.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, what happened to him when he was 13, there disqualifies him from going into the military because of all these rules they have. And it's really kind of unfortunate, depressing for him.
I agree. That's the whole issue of people who are one-time felons who then have that on their record, and it almost makes it impossible for them to get a job. Although I have sympathy also for the non-felons. You know, there's new laws that now say we can't use a felony as a way to exclude a class of people. It's complicated. Anyway, so what did he do when he was 13? I'm curious.
I don't want to go into it.
Okay.
Just quickly, my ex-wife and I were going through a very childish divorce between us, and mm-hmm. he sort of took the brunt of it. And, you know, it was really our fault, but I don't want to get into it. But he did get in trouble. And, you know, the military has this whole list of things. If certain things happen when you're 13, if it happens when you're 12 years old and 11 months and 29 days, it doesn't matter. But if it happens when you're 13, then they have this, like, waiver process that you can go through to get through these things.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I just thought I'd call to see if you had any insight into how to sort of navigate that.
Yeah, well, you mentioned that I was aware that there is some kind of, there's always exceptions in these things. So it would really depend on the kid. If I were in, you know, I don't know the new one. It's going to be, these kind of things are very subjective. But if I were the adjudicator in this situation, and if this kid both in writing and verbally said something like the following, and he didn't externalize the blame, because, you know, a lot of people have messy divorces and they don't commit violence or sell drugs or whatever the hell he did. But if he says, I was a 13-year-old jerk, and I am really eager to make amends, and here are some of the things I've done since I was 13 that show that I'm worthy of being in the military or whatever, and you list point by point by point by point, he says, And if that becomes a compelling pattern that action at 13 was an anomaly, then if I'm the adjudicator, I am absolutely going to want that kid. But if I feel like he's BSing me and he doesn't have much of a track record since he's 13 and he's been in kind of a jerk the entire time since then, adios, muchacho. Does that make sense?
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, if you that's kind of where I see it. He doesn't see it that way. 16 years old, you know, and things are different when you're 16. But if you have any insight or anybody I can talk to about this to kind of help through the process, that would really
that's
be
my my best shot would be, first of all, I want to make clear, I know again with sensitivity, when I said adios muchacho, I was not at all implying that people of a particular ethnicity would be more likely to, I was, but you never know, I'm just trying to be careful, as I really do try.
But, yeah, totally fine.
Right. Anyway, so what I would do, is, and again, what I would do is I would sit down with him, and essentially in the same way as you create a resume, you would go through his life from 13 on forward to 16 and list all of the things that he's done that are good. Now, I'd also ask you to be statesmanlike. If he's been continued to be kind of a jerk all the way through, maybe he doesn't, he shouldn't, you shouldn't try to get him to get a free pass for his bad behavior. Son, you'll, if, let's say he really was a screw-up from 13 to 16, and that was just merely the most documented example. I would say, son, look at your behavior. If you were the military or any employer or a college, would you admit you? And that may be a good trigger for a conversation that might get him to change, realizing that he's not going to get in the military, nor he deserves to. But instead, it's maybe time to really start developing a track record that would make any university or any military or any employer proud. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and that's, it's funny because that's exactly what he's doing. And when you, you know, read this stuff about the military and applying for waivers, you know, you could become Einstein. And waivers are so rarely granted.
Then you know what? I'm going to interrupt you. Fine. Yeah, if that's a done deal, then you know what? You're going to have to pay your price for that. But they're not. If you are to use a Jewish term that I like called mensch, a person or character, if after your screw up, even now at 16, if you've still been screwing up and not doing anything really productive, if you know you're still 16, you're not 76. Let's
right.
develop a life plan. What are you going to do now to show that you're a person of character? Where should you volunteer? What courses should you take? What business should you start? Who should you work with? Where should you volunteer? Everything to help build, make you a person of character, so that when you apply for some other job, you know, let's say in a police department, let's say the military doesn't allow them, but let's say, and maybe, you know, the rules could be more stringent, say, for the Army and Air Force, less stringent for the Coast Guard, for example. You know, or the Merchant Marines. You know, we are fortunate here in the Bay Area in Vallejo to have the Maritime Academy.
And yeah, my older son actually goes there.
Well, there you go. So, you know, there are going to be different criteria. Or there are colleges that are military-oriented, if you really want to go military. The Citadel is world-famous for that. There are other institutions. He's not going to get into West Point, I'm guessing, you know, but if he's going to, you know, there are institutions like the Citadel that would take him, and if he shows his, I can't say that, it's not so easy to get in the Citadel either, but the point is, treat this as a learning opportunity. So many parents are just excuse makers to try to get a kid a break, and whereas sometimes the wisest thing to do is to teach your kid not to skirt the system, but how to be a person of character. Anyway, that's my best thoughts. I thank you very much for calling Work with Marty Nemko. Okay. All our lines are lighted up. So, again, you're my priority. Let's go back to the phones. Welcome to the show. It is your turn on the air. What is on your mind?
Hello. I had a word that I find useful.
Great.
The word is nuance.
Yeah, I used it 4 times in the show already.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Absolutely. Nuance. Right. So much of decision is not black and white thinking. It's not bumper sticker rhetoric. It's nuance. And
do you want an example of how I might use it?
Absolutely.
Okay, someone says that Donald Trump is a fascist.
Right.
And I say, well, no, I have a more nuanced view of Donald Trump. I think he's a proto-fascist.
Okay, yes, a little better. But he is guilty of tremendous amount of black-white thinking. He is emblematic of lack of nuance. I'm anti-Trump, I'll just say that. He's an embarrassment to our political system. But yes, what is emblematic of who he is that he lacks nuance. And you may have a more nuanced view of him, or you may be a proto-fascist or whatever. I also don't like that name-calling thing. Name it, calling him a fascist,
right.
Racist, sexist, whatever. That's what, I used another term earlier called ad hominem. Let's focus on the issues. It is not ad hominem to say that he is extremely discursive and he changes positions, he forgets what he says two sentences ago, let alone a day before, and that means that he's got serious issues about his qualifications to be president. That's not ad hominem, it's on the merit. And with Hillary, I mean, to say she's name-calling is horrible, but to say, you know, I'm concerned, she's had a number of health incidents that she's she fainted apparently yesterday at the 9/11 thing today. You know, I'm wondering if that's an anomaly or is that an indication of her physical fitness for the stamina of being president. That's not ad hominem. That's discussing the issues, and that is drives me crazy when I watch CNN, which I do watch a fair amount, and I see they are so guilty of the ad hominem name calling.
Yeah, I agree with you, Marty. It's I was kind of using that facetiously. I don't think calling people fascists and this sort of thing.
Any name calling never works.
That kind of leads to another distinction I find useful: a description of something, as opposed to the interpretation. I can describe what Hillary said or what Donald said, but then that's a description. But then when I use an interpretation, this is just how I interpret it.
And it's great if you label it as such. I'm inferring, right? To say
people can see the same thing, but. They can see the same thing, describe it the same way, and have various interpretations of what they see. So that distinction also is very...
Absolutely, and that establishes your credibility too. So, you know, I observed her doing X, and my inference is that it's, for example, the Hillary thing, that it's nothing, that all people have coughing spells. People, you know, when they're older, I guess in the heat, it was 82 degrees. Maybe that was a little hot for her. Maybe I don't think it's anything serious. Or I interpret that as potentially being worthy of greater transparency and that she needs to be more forthcoming and not just rely on her personal physician's report. You know, whatever. But as long as you are allowed to make inferences, but by labeling them as such, you're elevating the discussion. And especially here, we're not talking about politics. These are just, you brought up those examples, but we're talking about the workplace. The more you can label, this is something I've observed, here is the data, and here is how I interpret it, to use your term, here
right.
is an inference I'm drawing. Anyway, thank you very much for calling
exactly.
the show.
Exactly. All right, thank you.
Okay, let's go back to the phones. I want to again prioritize you. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. It's your turn on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi, Marty. I'm Sue from El Cerrito.
Hello, Sue.
I have a phrase for you.
Great.
I was a student of Suzuki Roshi, a local Zen teacher, master.
Okay. All right.
Who passed away but has a huge influence with his book, Beginner's Mind.
Mm.
Somebody almost laughingly asked him one time, could you explain Zen in just a few words? And we all laughed. Mm. And then the teacher said, yes. And we went, what? And he said, not always so.
Mm. Yes.
Meaning you got to pay attention to something to see if it's really true what you think already about.
That's the nuance thing. It's not always so. Again, certain things are true under certain circumstances. That's a good, nuanced, absolutely statement. Also,
yes.
The term that you just used, the name of his book, The Beginner's Mind. That's a nice phrase.
By Suzuki Roshi.
Yeah, I don't mean the. I mean the concept. It's a concept that I first saw at Republic of TT. On the, I bought some tea, and in the back it was a cherry tea called Beginner's Mind tea. I didn't know what it was, and so I Googled it, and I realized that sometimes you need to set aside all of your previous thoughts about a subject so you can look at a situation afresh.
Yeah.
That's a beginner's mind. It's a good, another good term, which I'd not have thought about in this context, for making you a more nuanced thinker in the workplace. I thank you very much for your call.
Oh, you're welcome, Marty. Thank you.
Great. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Let's go back to the phones. I'll take one more call on this, and then we'll move to something else, I guess. Let me give out the phone number, though. This time, I just want your calls if you've got a work problem. I want to be sure that I'm not shortchanging you. If you have any kind of work problem, it doesn't have to be you're unemployed and looking for a job, like one of the previous callers. If you have a problem at work with a coworker in trying to move up, in afraid of getting downsized, an issue, any kind of issue related to your work life or self-employment. You know, I like to think that I can be like in Shark Tank, but hopefully with a little bit of a Bay Area spin. If you've got a work idea, a self-employment idea that you're either doing or contemplating, and you'd like me to ask you some questions to try to tease out what may be a way to either improve the idea or scrap it, I invite you to call. Those are all good reasons to call for what I call a workover with no pummeling involved. The phone number here, Work with Marty Nemko and KALW, 415-841. 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And now to the phones. Welcome to the show. What is on your mind?
Hello?
Hi.
Oh, great. I got in line. There's a phrase that often is used, think outside the box,
right,
which I find patronizing and demeaning and a rejection of participation. And I'd like to suggest, can you clarify your assumptions or examine your assumptions in this one?
I would say there's while out of the box has certainly become a cliche, and anytime something becomes a cliche, it makes people roll their eyes.
Yeah.
But there is, sometimes there is a time for incremental thinking, where, and sometimes thinking out of the box is that, you know what, we've been doing things pretty much the same old way and tweaking around the edges for a long time. Let's hear some thinking that really represents some disruptive or out of the box or transformational thinking. How can we think very differently? So sometimes that is appropriate. I don't want to dismiss the concept, even though the term has become cliche. So tell me again, what was the phrase you're preferring?
Well, let's clarify or examine some of your assumptions.
Well, that's very different. That's that's merely...
Yeah,
because that's really only focusing on, you know, it's clarifying and digging deeper into what a person said, and that's perfectly good. Let's clarify your assumptions, but that is not an alternative to out-of-the-box thinking. Those are just two different kinds of concepts. Anyway, thank you very much for the call. Let me offer a few more of these terms of mind that I like, that I think elevate conversation in the workplace, and then we will... We will move. Oh no, we've got calls. Let's go to the phones. I will prioritize you. Okay. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. It is your turn on the air. What is on your mind?
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. I have been doing volunteer work for the past 10 years after selling a company, mm-hmm. and a little bit of consulting in there that I was paid for, but mostly I'm doing stuff for free.
Mm-hmm.
And I interviewed on the phone for something yesterday that pays $15 an hour. I don't need the money right now. I need it ultimately. I want to work again. I need to work again. But I have two master's degrees, MBA and MSW. I was a CEO, and my friend was saying, well, just do it. Just do it to do something. And my thinking is I need to put my energy into finding something more suited to me.
Great. So let's play a game here. I want to know some, you need to tell me some clues about yourself that will help me. Well, first of all, let me ask you this. Do you know what that higher level thing is, or is the purpose of this call to help me for me to help you tease out what that higher level thing would be?
Well, part of it is I want to work in the field of reproductive health.
Okay.
And I've worked in healthcare, but not that arena at all.
Okay.
With an MSW, I have the social work background. I also have the, you know, business management background.
Right. And are we talking about working at a place like Planned Parenthood? Are we talking working at a fertility clinic? Are we talking about being an advisor to women who want to get pregnant? What are you picturing?
I'm picturing something like Planned Parenthood or some other reproductive rights organization. I have a policy background as
Great.
Well.
Wonderful. Yeah. Okay. And I mean, I hate sounding like a broken record, but this is the smartest thing to do. It would be to make a list of all of the entities, small and large, because Planned Parenthood is the brand name, so everybody who's interested in reproductive rights thinks Planned Parenthood, and so do I. As an organization, I believe in deeply. But there are smaller ones that are less above the radar that may be more likely to hire you. Since you've been a volunteer for so long, you may be more likely to get hired at a less brand name institution. So using Google or whatever, find the names of some less known reproductive rights or reproduction-oriented entities, and try to get into those with the front door and the back door. The front door is simply answering ads and explaining why you'd be such a good fit. The back door is finding somebody who works at that organization and not asking for a job, saying, you know, and I believe in expressing emotion, is saying, I'm a little scared. I've been volunteering for a long time. I've got all these credentials, an MBA and MSW. I've been a CEO. I'm nervous that I'm not hireable because I've been such a volunteer. I'm wondering if you might sit down and have a cup of coffee with me to see if you have any advice for me. That's the backdoor approach. If I said that that's what you should do, does that feel right or wrong?
Yeah, no, I have been doing some of that, and one of my questions is, I applied for a couple of jobs that were, you know, way up their executive level, and so do I need, because I've been out of the workforce, do I need to look at
a stepping stone? Probably.
Yeah.
I would apply, you know, if it wasn't taking too much soul out of you. Some people give so much of themselves and they get disappointed when they don't get even past the first interview. But if it didn't bother you, it can give you hopes, like buying a lottery ticket. It isn't going to cost you much and it gives you a little hope. But you probably need some stepping stones. You know, some. But it needs to. The stepping stone needs to be not where you're marginalized, sitting in a cubicle or working at home, licking envelopes. You need to have face time with the people with the power to hire you for something more important. So let's say there is this smaller reproductive organization, and your job is one where you are even an admin or even a receptionist going in, but immediately, because your mind is that, you know, someone who's an MBA and MSW CEO, all this, you know, who's got a healthcare experience, is going to instantly reveal herself to higher management, even when you just chat with them for 2 minutes, that you are a person who could do more than being a receptionist. So getting into a quality organization as a stepping stone is good, as long as you're not marginalized and sitting in a corner where nobody gets to see you. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does make sense.
Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks very much.
You're welcome. Let me give out a couple more of these terms, and then we'll go back to the phones. These are terms that I believe elevate the conversation in a workplace, will help you as an individual to be perceived better, as well as perhaps elevate your own thinking. Or if these terms are simply not you, it may help you understand why you're an individual contributor and somebody else is a leader in some cases. A term I love is humankind. That term is great when you're describing a policy with the broadest potential impact. For example, make transformational instruction available online and you improve humankind from Alabama to Zululand. It allows you to really think globally. Humankind, great word. Of course, mankind is not politically incorrect. We can't use that anymore. So it's humankind, which is fine. Another term I love is meta-analysis, or it's similar terms, meta-evaluation or review of the literature. So many research studies are flawed because to do a methodologically rigorous research study is infeasible, too expensive, or because the individual study has inadvertent error, or, and this is much more common than researchers want to admit, the results of an individual study are deeply flawed because of investigator bias. Whereas if you use meta-analysis or meta-evaluation or literature review, those are terms that describe the analysis of many studies. And so when you're looking across many studies, you're going to get much more valid inferences. So where possible, especially when you're looking at social science research, which is really quite especially prone to all those kind of errors, encourage in your workplace saying, hey, could we find, before we adopt this, instead of just jumping on one study that says we should do X, let's see if we could do a review of the literature of it. Could somebody want to go and research and see if we could find a half dozen relevant studies? Or maybe there's already been a meta-analysis or a meta-evaluation done, which, like, I'm looking at Joanne Marr. Joanne has done a lot of work on private prisons. It's anybody can come up with one study that's either for them or against them. But the predominant, if you're looking at 5 or 6 or 10 good quality studies not made by advocacy groups, because advocacy groups, obviously, they have a bias that even if it's not intentional, tends to come out. But if a relatively neutral body is conducting the research on private prisons and you do looking at a half a dozen studies on the impacts, various impacts of private prisons, you're going to come up with a far stronger set of inferences and reasoned arguments for why they should shut them down, or more nuanced, where are they appropriate? Where are they not? Nuance, nuance, nuance. So review of the literature, meta-analysis, meta-evaluation is the signature of really thoughtful looking at the research. Another term I love is zeitgeist. That's a term that describes an era's dominant values and beliefs. For example, the current zeitgeist values redistribution toward a more egalitarian society. Zeitgeist. It's a real good term that, you know, we use in terms, you know, the more common terms are the meme, the dominant meme. But I like the word zeitgeist because it really incorporates what is the dominant spirit of the era, the dominant value system of the era. So even if you're in a corporation who's working on selling a widget, saying, you know, the zeitgeist is very anti-corporate right now. And so maybe if we in our commercials, we talk about that we, you know, all of our pro-social and charity, the foundation work that we donate to charity. Yeah, it may be greenwashing or whatever, but we need to be synergistic with the zeitgeist of the era and not ignore it. Zeitgeist is a great word. Externalities, that's another wonderful word. Most problems have multiple causes. For example, a company may do poorly not just because of its intrinsic weaknesses, but because of external challenges. These are externalities. Excessive regulation, maybe unfair competition, say with another country, or community protest is an externality. It's not something intrinsic to the company, or high taxes. So an intelligent analysis of you're developing plans, strategy, in any workplace, for-profit or non-profit, is to take into account not just the internal strengths and weaknesses of a company, but the externalities. It's a great word. Magic pill. That's a great term that cautions against too quickly embracing the miracle du jour. To be honest, my PhD specialized in the evaluation of innovation. And in the almost, now it's unbelievable how many decades since I began graduate school, I have seen so many innovators cite a study showing remarkable gains. But what ends up happening is the findings can very rarely be duplicated by other investigators, and even more rarely are they successful on a national scale. That's why I look for initiatives that have been around long enough to have been studied by many and on which a meta-evaluation has been conducted. One more, I can't help, this is important, even more important than the calls. Ideological diversity. We are all told to celebrate diversity, and many of us claim to, but we tend to stop celebrating and start censuring, dare an idea veer from the orthodoxy. Wisdom does reside across the ideological spectrum. So using the term ideological diversity encourages a mindset that isn't overly censoring, and in the workplace, that's very important. There tends to be a dominant way of thinking, especially, frankly, here in the Bay Area, where there is a lot of groupthink, and at universities. So if you look for ideological diversity, you'll generally come up with better ideas. Gamification, it's another term I love to use. I'm impressed by the power of video games to motivate people without the need for financial remuneration. And key to that motivation are things like points and badges. For example, I have a client who works for a corporation. She runs the customer service thing, and she's trying to build a community, an online community. And she gives points to people for making, when they make good suggestions that get put into the online community, online support, you get points, and you get a certain number of points, you become a ninja or whatever. So in your workplace and in education, it's important to include gamification. And last, cosmic justice. To me, that is the highest goal. As often as possible, I try to think of the implications of an action, not only on all stakeholders, but on how it comports with universal justice, with a cosmos that, if there were a God, would make that God nod. And that is Work with Marty Nemko for this week. I want to thank my board operator, Joanne Marr, and all of you for listening and calling in. Please join me again next Sunday at 11. My guest will be Barbara Nemko, my wife. We're going to talk about the power of calm. She's got it. I don't. Maybe she can teach me a few things. And we'll talk about public speaking for people who aren't naturally good at it. Until next Sunday, this is Marty Nemko reminding you that we find comfort among those who agree with us, growth among those who don't.